Welcome to a new edition of the Neon Jazz Interview Series with Kansas City-based guitarist, composer, arranger, and teacher Jeff Shirley on the 2022 CD Blue Gold. He ventures into a tasty collection of new tunes on this latest release. He opens up about the album, COVID life, rebuilding the Kansas City jazz scene, and so much more. Enjoy.
Yeah. Hey, thanks for sending the album. Thanks for taking a minute out. I really enjoyed listening to it. It's just, there's a sonic punch to it. It's very nice.
Oh, thank you very much. Thanks for checking it out.
Yeah, totally. You know, before we get into the album, obviously, you know, not only Kansas City musicians, but musicians worldwide, artists have gone through quite an extreme time. And, you know, for Kansas City, the scene has always been so rich and flush, and now we're kind of getting back to it. How did you do during COVID? How did this time treat you? I think the last time we spoke was in either 18 or 19, so life is totally different now.
Yeah, COVID, hopefully we can say we grew, you know, hopefully we can say we got some good lessons out of it and we wound up on the other side. So I think there's a lot of good things there. But for me, I could say that I gained the COVID 20 pounds or whatever, at least. Mm-hmm. And so the past, you know, I've been trying to get back, you know, I've lost a good amount of weight in the past, you know, 6 months. And so feeling good about that. And, you know, one of my favorite interviews of yours is the Sonny Rollins interview, because I love listening to Sonny talk. I find him so inspirational. And, you know, he's someone that, you know, he was concerned about eating healthy even back in the 50s. And I love these people that were ahead of the times. Even someone like Eden Abes, the guy who composed the song Nature Boy, you know, he was actually a Kansas City pianist under a different name. Went to California and wrote a song like Nature Boy. I mean, he was a vegetarian in the 50s. I just find that amazing. And these people that are so ahead of the curve. And Sonny, on a recent interview, said, you know, jazz musicians should, the jazz musician of the future, you know, what does that look like? And he said, we should be healthy, and we have to kind of be, hold ourselves to maybe a higher standard and, you know, not only be a great, try to be a great player, but, you know, a healthy person and even spiritually healthy and things like that.
It's so interesting you mentioned that. And, you know, Sonny is such a transformative figure. I think about so many aspects of that interview that, you know, I always say that the jazz community, and I truly believe this deep, deep down, I've seen a lot of professions, a lot of people in my life, and I'll be 50 this year. So I think I've been around a little bit, and I have never met a group of people that is as talented, friendly, humble, and grounded as jazz musicians. And the higher you go up the ladder to someone like Sonny, the more gracious and beautiful they are. I remember one time a few years ago along those lines of nutrition and just older jazz musicians being very wise and sage souls. Bobby Watson was on KCUR getting interviewed. And right before he got off, the interviewer said, so is there any other advice that you would give? Or is there anything else you want to say? And he just said, out of the blue, drink your water. So there's nothing more important, you know, and it was so out of the blue, but it's so essential. And I told him that in an interview about a year later, right before the world shut down in 2020, I interviewed him. And I said, when I heard that, it's so essential. And he was coming from like a musician standpoint. You got to stay hydrated. But I think about that in general. It seems really simple, but you do need to stay hydrated. And, you know, those older cats just have a bead on things that are simple yet profound.
And Sonny is so obsessed, so interested in growth. You know, he loves his personal growth. And it's amazing to hear him say that he, even listening to his past recordings, you know, he doesn't necessarily feel great about them. And he's always wanting to grow. And I can identify with that feeling. And I think music and health, you know, it's like in music, we learn to, you practice today for how you want to sound next week. You know, it's not what I tell some of my guitar students, you know, it's like growth is not always obvious or immediate or painless even. And so practice today for how you want to sound, you know, next week or tomorrow, and get used to like not immediate results. And I think health is, of course, the same way. We have to eat and hydrate today so we can feel good tomorrow. So for that gig tomorrow, so we can feel really good. So let's, you know, prepare. Think about that gig tomorrow today. So a little bit of thinking ahead. And yeah, he's very selfless and very humble and Yeah, amazing inspiration. I love listening to the interviews. So thank you for all the interviews, because I love listening to jazz interviews, and it is really fun.
Oh, cool, man. Thank you. I appreciate that. Sometimes I feel like I'm operating in a vacuum, but I feel like sometimes the jazz community, the ears are really wide open. So I'm glad that you dig it. It goes over well. So I'm curious, with this album, an outgrowth of, or how did it come about creatively?
This album, well, there were some songs through 2018, from last time I talked to you till now, had even more kind of spiritual growth, and then getting some opportunities for some gigs, and some of those gigs were, they had to be all originals. And so all of a sudden I'm going back to my catalog and looking at all my originals and be like, oh, okay, we need to, you know, we need 4 hours of originals. And so that was, that really helped. I needed to write some songs, and, you know, during 2020, some songs, you know, I was home a lot. And so maybe that's why I gained a little weight. Maybe it was, you know, too much pizza or something, but also there was a lot of time alone and some songs were coming out. A song like Eastbourne, kind of like, you know, woke up out of a nap and this kind of chord progression just kind of fell out a little bit, or, you know, they all come out a little different, but, you know, but yeah, just, and getting to play those tunes live a lot really solidifies them compared to the last album, where I didn't necessarily get to play those tunes live as much as before this album. And so getting to workshop them live, so that was more of this experience. It was, a lot of these tunes had been played more, and so it gave me more confidence in the studio. And then this one, I just wanted to be, this the last one, you know, acoustic bass, things like that. This one, I wanted to be a little more electric bass. There's more organ, still a lot of Fender Rhodes, trumpet. And I just wanted to really make an album that I would enjoy cruising around listening to. And so it's got some synth guitar on it, which some people would say that's kind of taking a risk. But I like the way it sounds. And so there's a couple songs that have synth guitar solo. There's some fretless guitar. I just wanted to take some chances, and I think I'll do the same thing on the next project, just having some tunes and then getting in the studio and having some fun and, you know, putting it together in the way that I really like, and taking my time. This album took more time. I spent more time in the studio versus the last album, which was pretty much just a live recording in the studio. You know, this one was more a studio project, I guess you could say.
And I think maybe that's another outgrowth of this. I noticed there's been some more electronica elements, some more pushing the sonic barriers to places that may not have been broached before this pandemic. Do you think that might be the case too?
I hadn't thought about that, but that's very interesting to think about those positive, unexpected results. Going back to, you know, thinking about like the Depression in the 1930s and all the, there's some really great things that came out of, you know, you think about the Great American Songbook from the 30s and all those great songs. And would that have all happened if not for the Depression? You know, I don't know. But that's exciting to think about. And I love the idea of people taking chances and going deep and putting out something, you know, that they're really happy with and excited about. And people can say, oh, I haven't heard something like that. Or I think that could be really great.
You know, the one thing too, you know, you've been very active on the live scene. And I think when I take my brain back to before the pandemic and just how flush and how full and everything was just, it was such a well-oiled machine here. It seems like a lot of those things have picked right back up. You know, John Scott's still busy down on 18 and Vine. You know, Gerald's done great work with the Blue Room. They're doing this Afternoon Thursday series. But I think in general, too, there's probably other pieces that I don't recognize from where I'm at as a spectator. So from your perspective, how do you see this rebuild and happening in Kansas City? And how do you think we've done as a city so far?
That's a good question. I think it ebbs and flows. And, you know, as you, when you first, you know, really try to start breaking into the Kansas City scene, you know, you go to all the jam sessions. And I remember, you know, 2012 or especially 2014 through 17 or 18 for me, I remember I could go to a jam session almost every day of the week. And that was really fun. And I was doing that. And then as you, you know, you can't do that forever, although some people do, and I respect that. But, you know, eventually if you start to get more gigs or maybe you just get busy, you can't feel like you can't do that anymore. But, and so you don't necessarily see, you don't see all the jammers coming in. And I, you see them though, when I play at the Blue Room on Monday, you know, you still see so many. It seems better than ever because, you know, the sax players are lined up outside the door and, you know, a lot of hungry, great musicians. And, I think Kansas City will always have that there. And, but, you know, I remember, you know, there were some things that were closing beforehand. Like I remember, you know, it was a shame when Californo's closed. I think that was before 2020, March. And, you know, we had a jam session there every Wednesday. It felt a couple times, like every time I would get a gig or like a steady gig, it would like the place would close or something. I remember, you know, getting the Californo's, getting a monthly at Californo's, and then, you know, it was a month or two later and they closed. And I was like, and something similar happened to the pandemic. I got a weekly at Green Lady, and then the pandemic happened. And I was like, oh my gosh, how does this keep happening? But it ended up working out. And it's amazing to see how even the club owners can readjust and thrive because of their dedication, because of their knowledge and intelligence. It's pretty amazing.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. And speaking of, you know, those live elements, what do you hope we all realize about the power of live music now that we're getting back to it?
Power of live music. It's so fun to have an audience reaction. And I wish, you know, in the studio, that's one thing I miss is sometimes I think if I'm going to the studio, let's have some people there or let's have like a couple of waiters and waitresses walking around with a tray or something, because it is so nice to, you know, to have you, cause you know who's in the audience. You know, sometimes you don't know. To have an audience member come up afterwards that's so moved that they want to shake your hand or say something nice. I remember you asked Sonny or some of the nicest thing that an audience, someone has said, and I can remember a couple nice things. Even someone saying, oh, you know, every time I see you, you're always smiling or, you know, something like that. You can take that with you and just, and it can help keep you positive hearing someone say that, because I definitely don't feel like I'm always smiling or positive, but that was nice of them to say. And one time someone, you know, from Portland, there's so many people coming from around the country to Kansas City to hear jazz, and they were from Portland brother and sister, one from Portland, one from California. And he said, you know, you were born to do this. And I thought that's just about the nicest thing someone can say. Just felt really nice. And so to have someone come up, and obviously there's the other element too, where sometimes people are a little too familiar, a little too comfortable, and they come up and they start talking to the organ player in the middle of his solo. But, the live element is to have that audience right there. And I don't try to base my how I feel about my solo or the performance. I try to not make it based on the audience reaction, though, because, you know, you can have a great solo and the audience may just be, sometimes audiences are very engaged and the next night, same place, they can be a little bit withdrawn. And the audience has like, they talk about this in the acting world, but the audience has kind of like a group intelligence, and they're very smart as a group. And so there's just kind of the audience of the night, and it's just hard to predict. And so when I finish a solo, I try not to even judge myself too much, although I want to grow from my solos. But no matter if an audience goes crazy about it or doesn't react at all, I kind of want to feel the same. I don't want to be necessarily swayed by that. And although I love having them there, and I do play for the audience, you know, I feel like sometimes people say, oh, I play for the other musicians, or I play for myself, or I think it's for all those things. Play for the audience, and then also play for the musicians and play for ourselves. I really like to keep God in the center and try to, you know, who do we put in the center, really? If we can put him in the center, it can be very nice, I think. So that's some of my, where I'm thinking, some of my philosophies.
Let's get to the good business here of Blue Gold. Wonderful album, highly recommended. Anybody out there that wants to pick this album up, find out about live gigs, anything more about you and your musical life, where's the best place to go?
JeffShirley.com. You can find the links to the album, the physical or the streaming or the MP3s. And that's a great place. You can also go to Amazon, just type in Jeff Shirley Blue Gold. And can I mention, you said it's okay to mention a couple gigs? Yeah, I'm playing with RSS Trio as well as the Jeff Shirley Organ Trio at Green Lady Lounge. So Jeff Shirley Organ Trio right now is Mondays and Thursdays, late night, 10:30 p.m. or later. And then I'm with RSS Trio and Mark Slim on Friday, Saturday, Sunday at Green Lady, also same time period, 10:30 or later. Doing that and playing there a lot, and that's the main thing right now, as well as teaching.
Right on, man. Jeff, hey, it's been great to catch up with you. Thanks for taking a minute out. I look forward to getting this on Neon Jazz.
Oh, this is a thrill, Joe. Thank you so much.
Thanks for listening and tuning in to another Neon Jazz interview, where we give you a bit of insight into the finest cats in Kansas City and spots all over the world, giving fans all that jazz. Thanks to Jeff for his time, music, and stories. If you want to hear more interviews, go to Famous Interviews with Joe Domino in the iTunes Store. Visit NeonJazz at YouTube.com. And for everything Neon Jazz, go to the NeonJazz.blogspot.com and also JoeDomino.com. And there you can kick in via Patreon or PayPal. Until next time, enjoy the jazz, my friends.
Neon Jazz.